good-looking man appears on screen. Well-groomed hair, square jaw, often a white man. He takes a shower with a particular shampoo, which turns out to be very important to his character. The next scene cuts to him flying through a window in a high-rise to save a woman who is fighting with a bunch of aggressive-looking men, with a tagline, "Women are becoming increasingly strong, challenging men's skills and spirit." He grabs her by the waist and the two jump out of the building after blowing up the place. But that's not the end. She would get a noseful of his aroma. Then, the headline of the product that many of us in Vietnam have known since the early 2000s flies in.
X-Men, the real man.
There's no evidence suggesting that men in Vietnam take cues about how to be a man from commercial like this, but they do reflect many of the traditional criteria of a man that have a tremendous influence on Vietnamese men. Today, on Vietnam and Boba, how the notion of a true man influences their well-being and gender equality. Before you go anywhere, we're calling for patron. We won't be babbling about it too much, so now you can enjoy this fabulous episode. But go find out more about how to support us at buymeacoffee.com/vietnamboba. Now, back to the show.
Yeah, like when I think about like pressure, I think there's two ways to look at it. Like one way is like being in like a minority group, like I'm gay, like openly gay.
That's Hoàng Giang Sơn, an LGBT rights activist and former gender justice specialist at the Institute for Study of Society, Economy and Environment in Hanoi.
So like I do not conform to like those traditional masculine norms, right? And so that will cause me like something called minority stress. And it's gonna like affects my long-term development, or it can affect me in the long run. But another way of looking at it is those like masculine norms will be like the standards for guys to try to become or try to match all those kind of values. It can cause them stress, especially when they have to like constantly compare themselves to other men around them. So that's these two different ways of looking at pressure.
There are at least 23 criteria a Vietnamese man has to meet to be considered a real man, according to the first large-scale study on men and masculinities in Vietnam, published in 2020 by Hanoi-based Institute for Social Development Studies. So, according to this study that involves over 2,500 Vietnamese men, a real man must strive to become a member of the Communist Party, he must prioritize work, be a leader, and strive to climb up the social ladder. He also has to be proactive and has lots of sexual experience. He must be able to drink alcohol well and not be hesitant to use violence when needed. When it comes to family duties, an ideal man has to be the family's pillar and provide for the family. A true man also needs to be emotionally strong, daring, and sociable.
But talk about my minority stress. I mean, it's happened all the time, especially during my childhood, secondary school, high school. For example, like when puberty hits, you know, like my voice started cracks, and I noticed that my voice are not as manly as other guys, you know, like the way I laugh and the way I behave, you know, like there's like a little bit of feminine touch to it.
Did you realize that yourself, or did somebody tell you that?
Other tell me that. So that is that's what I call minority stress. So that is like the characteristic or value of like people from minority, and when they go to like a social settings, like a social environment, and then other people start to correct them for it. So like those kind of value conflicts the minority values and the dominant majority values, they have conflicts, so that caused me stress. So those people are usually my relatives, those aunties or uncles. They just have to add something like, oh, your voice is, your behaving is a little bit feminine today, or in Vietnamese they say, and it affects me a lot. Like it makes me check myself whenever I go to like a family dinner, or I go to meet my relatives. So I have to, in the past I had to, like, you know, try to be more masculine, you know, like just try to lower my voice a little bit, so to hide the fact that, you know, I'm a little bit feminine, to blend in with the group.
Playing sport was also a strategy to fit in.
With a guy's friend, like I've tried to, like, join the soccer team in high school. When they ask, like, hey, do you want to go to play some football? And I'm like, yeah. I'm like, it was like a very slow yes, but I know that if I don't play football with them, like, what else I'm gonna do, right? Like, there's like I already go to the English club and other club that I like, but in order to fit in with, like, the guys group, you know, yeah, I have to, like, force myself a little bit.
Things got better when Seun passed the university entrance examination with top grades, which gave him a lot of confidence. When he was in university, he also read a lot about gender diversity, inequality, and understood himself better. It also laid the foundation for him to become one of the prominent voices in the LGBT community in Vietnam. When he came out to his parents, that was a milestone.
I think this is one of the bravest things that I've ever did, and also one of the things that, you know, like, put an end on those questions, right, from my parents. So I came out to my parents when I was like 19, 18 or 19, around that. So I think that solved a lot of problems. So they will stop kind of those intrusive questions. They also made effort to understand more about me, more about, like, being gay. Like, is it a disease or not, or is it curable or not? You know, yeah. So, like, my relationship with my parents got better.
Remember the study I mentioned? One of the key findings says traditional masculine norms lead to negative impacts on men. Many of these norms may lead to men having high expectations of himself and putting restriction on others to conform to these norms. Nguyễn Phương Tú has been working on this issue. On the solution front, he first started gender advocacy at Vietnam Organization for Gender Equality, a grassroots youth-based organization which has now become a popular voice in Vietnam. He later became an educator for Guigro Edu, a Hanoi-based sex education startup with a focus on K-12 students and their parents.
I don't have data on that, but from my observation, there are a lot of shared problems among boys. Like, one problem I could think of is perhaps their reluctance to show emotions. I think emotions are a kind of taboo topic, not only among male adults, but, like, among young boys, children as well. They are, I think it's because they are taught to show some kind of like strength and resilience in a way that is not, like, really what it's meant to be. Like, you cannot cry, you cannot show, like, some kind of intimacy with others. You have to be very competitive and aggressive. You have to be playful, and you have the right to be playful and disrupt everything. I remember that in a class of ours, like, there's a boy who was very kind of playful, and he didn't want to conform to any activity. He didn't want to follow any rule. And he just, like, did that, and a lot of other boys also saw that and followed, and they say that they were encouraged to be like that. But at the same time, when it comes to the the more kind of sentimental part where they can be where they can share their feelings and emotions. They also felt some kind of reluctance. I think because when I heard what they said, it was mostly about their feeling uncomfortable with crying or with telling others about how they feel. So I think it's something that should really be critically discussed more. And I know that it's also a problem in schools. Like some teachers also like perpetuate those expectations of young boys by, for example, like disregarding their emotional issues, or like even when they are, like even encouraging some kind of like very competitive, aggressive behaviors among boys. And I think that is something that is like very socially encouraged, and it happens a lot. And I could also relate back to my experience as well as a child.
There are plenty of examples of teachers perpetuating certain male stereotypes, such as their aggression and uncontrolled sexual drive. In some cases of sexual harassment and assault, it is not uncommon to hear explanation like, oh, his sexual desire is too big, or his masculinity is too strong so he couldn't control himself. Boys and men are often encouraged to express particular emotions, aggression, resilience, violence, but not other emotions like feeling vulnerable. So educators like Du are trying to break down the barriers for young learners.
As we design our activities, we also think about like the experience, like how we can create an environment, a space where they can feel comfortable, first of all, to express themselves. Perhaps that kind of expression is problematic to some extent. Perhaps they are still like embracing some kind of very masculine behaviors at first. Like they also try to be playful and aggressive, but like we try to encourage them to question those behaviors. I guess that's perhaps the way I could put it. Like through some games or through some activities where they can reflect to the experience of other genders, other like the other sex or like other sexual orientations. I think those perspectives, those different perspectives, give them perhaps some more information. Like, so what? And also, I think gender is a very relational thing. Like, it's not just about the boys, but it's about the boys in relation to the girls or to like the gays or to the LGBT plus. It's also about the way they relate their behavior to others. Like, what if they act very aggressively, or what if they beat a girl or beat a boy that is not really manly or not really strong? So I think by giving some kind of perspective like that through experience, not through like lessoning, not giving them a lesson, but like through experience, I think they can feel, they can learn from something on their own, through their own like thinking and discussions. And also we try to push it a little bit further by encouraging them to share their like their own reflections, like what is on their mind, what is being an obstacle to them, or what's causing them some sadness, or like what's hurting them. Those conversations are kind of more intimate and more difficult to share, and that's why it's often at the end of the class, for example, where they feel really comfortable to share that. And through some kind of arts-based learning, for example, we put on a theater, or we put on some kind of drawing experiences, so they can like extract their feelings into those activities, and that perhaps is a more would be a more easy way to share feelings, and then And that's very interesting to see and to empathize with themselves as well.
But not every topic is easy to talk about.
To talk about toxic masculinity with children and with parents, I would start perhaps from certain norms and beliefs, and I would try to problematize them a little bit by giving some questions and giving like also placing the children in context where they have to question those belief systems, like perhaps through theater. So we have a lot of theater-based activities. Like we try to enact certain norms about masculinity, for example, and we kind of ask them what they think or what they feel about those reflections. And yeah, they would give some, at first they perhaps would give like some reactions that, yeah, that's normal of a boy to do so, like, or yeah, I think that's quite cool. But then if we shift the perspective a little bit, like imagine if they are the receiver of that action, or if this person carries a different gender, what would happen? What would be the different reactions of society towards that? And perhaps also by shifting their perspective, we also give students a chance to the children a chance to be like critical of that.
One particular student who was somewhat an archetypical boy stood out for doing something utterly human.
I remember one like once where I think that was a 10-year-old boy. He was very like very aggressive, very playful. But actually he on the other side he also is a very loving and caring boy. But he didn't show that because he think being aggressive is kind of cooler. So he tried to like perform that kind of coolness. But like after some kind of activities he knew that being cool doesn't like it's not associated with like being aggressive and being violent. It's about something else, something about himself. So at the end of that course, I remember that he started to hug people, and the act of hugging is a very intimate thing, and it is a material change. I can see and I still remember that from my boy. So it's one very meaningful thing at that class.
In Vietnam, sex education is not typically a standalone subject. It is delivered in bits and pieces in other subjects like biology or as extra curriculum. So interventions like what Tú offered can be significant. But I also confronted him about the fact that while classroom can offer a different environment, at the end of the day, students go back home to their family, friends, and community. How sustainable are these provocative lessons about gender norms in a context of entrenched patriarchy in many families and communities?
Yeah, I mean, that's the good question. And I think that's also a very critical space. Like one of the shortcomings I have to admit from my experience is that like the impact perhaps would be very limited to the classroom only if no further action is done. So we are also aware of that, and we try to engage like the surrounding environment as well. Like the parents mostly are an important actor in the process of supporting children as well. So in our classroom, we try to keep parents engaged by giving them some kind of assignments, so-called assignments, and also having some like activities in which parents can and children can sit together and talk about different types of conversations. I think the awareness of parents is incredibly important, and especially in the part where they know about I mean the problems happening with their children, and also about the problems that they perhaps they are the source of that problem. In most Vietnamese families, there is a kind of hierarchy among parents and children, and sometimes it makes things very hard to open up and to share in a way that the children might feel trusted or feel comfortable with their growing up experience. So it's really important that the parents take the time to listen and to respect their children.
Okay, so that's the parent side. How about institutions and their impact on gender inequality, masculinity norms, and expectation on men? Remember Stone, the gender specialist?
Yeah, I think like another way that the government is trying to enforce what I call heteronormativity in daily life is from propaganda. And one of the most, if I say this, like people hate me, but one of the most powerful influencer are the Women Union. Is a Women Union. So you know, like every couple of years, they will come up with slogans or I don't know, a lot of like key messages saying that a woman should do this or a woman should do that to become like a better wife, like become a modern wife. There'll be a lot of roles that are portrayed as like good roles for women. I mean, it doesn't help liberate women. It just added more like responsibility and stress to women. Like a lot of propaganda, advocating for like men's values and women's values and things like that. And a lot of those institutions are mass organization.
Because of the high expectations on men with balls of steel, it makes it harder for many to understand that they themselves can also be victims of abuse.
One, I think a lot of policy about like sexual harassment and assault can negatively affect men because usually they will say like women are like the victims and men somehow only see as like perpetrator, which is statistically proven true because men are more likely to become like perpetrator and women are more likely to become victims. However, like in terms of text, they should be like neutral terms when it comes to it, and also the people who are doing the jobs, for example, like policemen or people who work in like medical facilities, like they also should like look at those kind of issue, like sexual harassment cases or assault cases, in a more neutral and diverse way. Like men can be victim too, and men also face a lot of like self-blaming problems because they have always seen as masculine, so they can protect themselves. So when they were raped or they were drugged, they were blame themselves first because like they didn't know how to protect themselves, or they let that happen, or even people would not believe that they were actually raped. So victim blaming culture in Vietnam is pretty serious, and it affects men a lot as well.
Quite some serious consequences on men's well-being. But what is the nuance here? Remember Tu, the sex ed educator?
What is also interesting is that even if like men don't live up to those list of expectations, the fact that they are men still gives them a certain like advantage, like over those who are not seen as men. Like we can call it a kind of a patriarchal dividend.
Patriarchal dividend is a term coined by Australian masculinity studies scholar Raywin Connell. It refers to men's privilege as it happens in societies that favor men, either overtly or indirectly.
You even though you are not a muscular communist, successful Korean man, you are still benefiting from following or pursuing those traits.
But how fixed are these traits? I mean, is there going to be a trait that is considered masculine or feminine forever?
Yeah, so it's I think it's also related to queer theory. So so I think like ultimately queer theories would mean that anything that is outside of the norms, anything that is considered unusual, we still need to include it. So when the society has become more tolerant to minority groups, like men will benefit too, because like sometimes they will fall into the group. What I like about like masculinity and femininity is like they are not rigid. There's not something called masculine forever. You know, there's always people who are masculine, but they have also feature or choices or hobbies or anything that can fall outside of the masculine norms. So if a society are very queer, are very inclusive, it will accept that as well. So I think it will be like for men benefit to support a very like inclusive society, supporting like gay rights, queer rights.
So who has shown support for this agenda so far?
Surprisingly, you know, in Vietnam, a lot of the government officials are supporting queer agenda, you know, looking at the Ministry of Health, for example, or ministries in general. You would think like, you know, people from the government, they would have like a very narrow-minded people, and they only care about, you know, big politics stuff or political, or trying to make as much money as they can when they were there. But no, there's a lot of people in Ministry of Health, even people who are policymakers, they really listen to us. So that's why we have a lot of success stories. In 2004, gay marriage not banned anymore. Because in 2000, there was like a sentence there in the Article 10, I think. There was a sentence there saying that gay people are not allowed to get married. Yeah, but in 2014, it was none. Yeah, so, but it was still not recognized on paper, like in terms of the law, as like a married couple. But it's no longer criminalized. Look at the transgender law. You know, so transgender are now allowed to like change their identity, but still there's a lot of supporting arguments, or not argument, like the steps are not clear enough. So we are still trying to make it real for trans people.
Sun told me social movement should not only be seen in policies but also in everyday life.
I have to introduce like the definition of like public space and private space. Homosexuality or any gender minority groups are considered like deviants. It's considered not normal or weaker or mistakes or, you know, like things that are not supposed to be in public space. When we come to like public space, we can talk about like dominant values or traditional norms that are like widely accepted, that nobody talk about it because it's always accepted. So that's why it can go to the public space. What queer people has been doing in the past, like not even in Vietnam, like in other countries as well, is that they claim the public space to be theirs as well. For example, Hanoi Pride or Viet Pride, you know, is an annual event that people will go down on the street and I would not say marching, but which is like walk together on the street wearing rainbow flags. So you know, like that's a way of like claiming public space, and I think what Hannah Pry did in 2017 is really amazing, and it's, I think it was like the turning point. As well, one of the turning points of the LGBT movement is what is was the first time ever that like a group of LGBT people, like 2,000 LGBT people, will be able to walk in the most political area in Hanoi, which is the walking street. So you know, like in Hoan Kiem, like you know, there's a lot of like government official buildings there. And gay people were like, woo! Were like walking on the street, they're chanting a sing song and like shouting slogans like love is love or LGBT be strong, be free, you know, because I was the one who leading that group. So so yeah, so it's those kind of action really shows to the public that, I mean, like LGBT people are people, and people and everyone should be treated equally. Just one example, like I will show you. For example, for people with wheelchair, they cannot go up the stair, right? So, building will have to have the slider so they can go up, right? When the slider is built, can people still walk up the stair? Yes. And at that time, more people can walk up the stair, and when they build the slider, it doesn't mean that the other people with two legs, they can no longer walk up there anymore. It just opened more space for people to walk up there, and it's how society should be. That's how society should be, more equal, and pay attention to like different needs of its citizens and try to like fulfill it, because all citizens should be treated equal, right? The same way with queer people, right? Like, all the things that queer people are advocating, that doesn't really lessen the rights or the values of straight people. Like, think about it. Like, what happened if the same-sex marriage is passed? You know, will straight people get divorced more? I don't think so. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, so like when the society is more open, it's more tolerant to a more diverse group of people, the society in general benefit, because everyone is treated equal, everyone is treated with full dignity, people will work more productively and they will contribute more, and the society will gain a lot of from that, not less.
This episode was written and produced by me and edited by Zhang Fa. If you like it, please tell a friend about it and help them subscribe to our show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm Sen Nguyen, and this is Vietnam and Boba.